All right, before we start a new hour, again, as we welcome Marcus Spears back to the program, Swagoo, the one moment I did notice on your Instagram feed, what happened here?
Yeah, you know what happened.
I mean, first of all, disrespect, G, of y'all putting this on. I fell out of a boat, man. Right. My friend warned me that if I leaned too much in the seat, I would tip over in the boat. You know I'm 300 plus, I'm a BMB, and I took a drink. I went and drank, but we caught a lot of fish, so it was ended that day. And shout out to my man, Ken Pierce, Hook City TV. He on YouTube. He's a phenomenal fisherman. He's my friend. We fish together all the time. But G, I found out for the first time how an explosive life jacket works. You see that thing around my neck? We had to save it for the video because it was choking the hell out of me. I had to get out of it as soon as we cut the camera off.
So that wasn't always blown up. That's like what are the things in the car?
No.
In the steering wheel.
Airbag.
An airbag.
That just inflated.
Yeah.
Swagoo fell off a boat.
The funny part is, G, I fell off the boat and it was only like 3 feet of water, so I could have stood up. But I just let the floaty carry me. So I just laid back for a little while.
All right. Well, we're glad that you survived to tell the tale. With that, we welcome you back
to another
hour of Get Up. We are live from the Seaport. We're brought to you by Grey Goose. Look, it was an unbelievable night last night. It had hype unlike anything that I can think of in recent memory, and it lived up in every way. We got it covered from every possible direction. Andrea Carter and Rebecca Lobo back with us here. Game of the night last night. And the two superstars, Drea, were ready to go. Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, they met for the championship last year. This time it's for a trip to the Final Four. Andrea, right from the start, Caitlin was firing.
Caitlin Clark came out in attack mode greenie. She was laser focused, ready to go, but it was a back and forth affair between her and Angel Reese that truly set the tone for the game.
Angel Reese was in control of this game every bit as much, if not more, than Caitlin was through most of that first half. And then this happens, a key moment in the second quarter. Angel Reese already was nursing an ankle, and here she clearly aggravates it and was not the same after that, Drea.
Yeah, exactly what you said. Angel Reese is a fighter. She's resilient. She's never going to make any excuses, but she did not look the same. She looked a little hobbled. She looked a little bit slower. She did fight and play, but didn't look the same.
Yeah, LSU had gone on a run. They had taken a lead. In the end, there you see Caitlin. So we were tied at 45 at the half. Angel Reese had 13 points, 8 rebounds. Caitlin Clark had 19 points, 5 assists. And then the third quarter was all Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin Clark came out in takeover mode, Greeny, in the third quarter. Had 4 3-point shots. She had all of LSU looking as confused as Marcus when he fell out of that boat. That's how the team was looking. What's going on? What do we do? What's the solution? There is none. She was unconscious. She was in the zone in that third quarter. It was remarkable. Watch this. Retreat dribble. Give me space. Bottom of the net. I'm telling you, she was in her bag.
12 points in the third quarter alone for Caitlin Clark. A minute left in the third. Now Iowa's up by 7. They're turning defense into offense here. Clark with a terrific pass. Iowa an 11-point lead going to the fourth quarter. And as LSU hung around, but never able to really get themselves back in it. We're over 5 minutes to go. Iowa up by 8. And look at Caitlin Clark one more time from beyond the arc. 41 points to go with 12 assists and 7 rebounds. Look at Haley Van Lith. There's just nothing you can do. She was in that kind of mode. And then Clark, look at putting a fiddle finishing touch on it here. Hannah Stahlke putting it in. And it is Iowa gaining its revenge. A year ago, LSU cut down the nets with Iowa as the loser. This time, it goes the other direction. Iowa and Caitlin Clark. A nice moment there with Kim Mulkey. They're headed to the Final Four off the monster night from the superstar, Caitlin Clark.
It's amazing to be back in the Final Four. It's so hard to get there, especially with this region and how loaded this region was. But, you know, we told ourselves we're the one seed for a reason. You know, we've earned this. We deserve to be in these moments. We're prepared for these moments. We want to win 2 more. And, you know, I think we have the power to do that.
She's just a generational player, and she just makes everybody around her better. What did I say to her? I said, I sure am glad you're leaving. I said, girl, you something else. Never seen anything like it.
So it's a remarkable night in every way, and Legler is here with his analysis, and Rebecca Lobo, who of course was courtside calling all the action for us last night with Ryan Rucco. And Rebecca, let's start by putting this in some perspective. We've talked a lot about the game and the X's and the O's and all the rest of that. But there are so many new fans to the sport. There were so many people who watched last night who don't know the history of the sport, certainly not nearly to the level that you do. So when someone says, I'm watching Caitlin Clark, is she the best player that you've ever seen? Rebecca, what's the answer to that?
I'll tell you, for me, she is the best offensive player that I have ever seen, at least in the last 30 years that I have been either playing or calling women's college basketball games. When you get into the GOAT conversation, does she need to win a national championship in order to be considered the GOAT? I don't think so. I think she needs to win multiple national championships to be in that kind of a conversation. Because when you look at the history of the game, you know, Candace Parker won two championships at Tennessee. Diana Taurasi won three championships at UConn. And what was kind of unique about Taurasi, her sophomore year when she won her first championship, she was surrounded by four players who all went on to be WNBA All-Stars. They all graduated. Then she had a new cast of characters around her. She was able to win two more championships. Breanna Stewart won four national championships. Not only won four championships, she was the most outstanding performer in four Final Fours. Caitlin is an incredible player. She has done more in terms of bringing attention and eyeballs to the women's game than any player we have ever seen. That's a mere fact. But when you want to talk about the GOAT conversation and you add championships to the mix, you have to understand the history of the game.
I love that perspective, and that's exactly why we needed you here this morning. I'm blowing everything else out. We're staying here. Andrea, through your eyes, as a terrific player yourself, and I was watching you and Shanae last night with all of the conversation, and that second half, the way she just took over that game, how would you describe what Caitlin Clark did last night?
Truly, Greeny, it was inspiring at times. Like, to watch Caitlin in this moment with all eyes on her trying to take down the defending national champions and to do it with such incredible poise and show her basketball IQ and her understanding of the game, that's what really blew me away. She was in complete control. Watch Caitlin Clark get into the retreat dribble and create space and shoot over a high hand of Angel Reese in her face. Her ability to get to her spots, to manipulate the defense, to even show a little bit of defense, read the pass, intercept it, and then watch her slow down. All eyes on Caitlin. Caitlin's eyes on Sydney Afalter running the floor. Her understanding of the game and her control of the game was on full display. We called her a surgeon. We said it was a masterclass. You could call her the puppeteer, the way she controlled things, the behind the back into a three where Haley Van Lith is giving you the I can't help you right now. I don't know what I'm supposed to do right now. Caitlin was remarkable. And I'm going to say inspiring because we've talked about basketball left and right. She's a great player. But to do those things in this moment, if we could all move with that kind of poise and that kind of control through difficulties in life, we'd all be better for it.
And Legs, I mean, no one knows more about shooting than you do. And I know that's what you were watching last night in particular as you watch Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, but ironically, the thing that impresses me the most is her passing. And for this reason, Greeny, look, there's a lot of players that have shot the ball at an incredible level. In the women's game, men's game, off the catch and shoot, off the dribble, off the mid-range. Some do it better than Caitlin Clark in all of those areas. Nobody shoots it better off the dribble from deep. We know that. But none of it's possible, Greeny, without her facilitation. None of it. Because this is what makes her the dual threat. The fact that you now cannot load up on her to such an extent because she will beat you with her passing. And some of these assists that we're showing last night, the precision with which she's delivering the basketball, it has to be delivered in one spot at exactly the right time. And she does it, even under immense pressure on the perimeter. Obviously, her shooting sets her apart. This is the thing that, you know, creates space. She goes out to a place that's just impossible to account for defensively. No one is used to developing a game plan that far out on the floor. We know that. But I really believe it's the fact that she can beat you with her passing, her vision, her anticipation of what is going to come next. That is what makes Caitlin Clark who she is, the dual threat component of her game.
Yeah. Rebecca, pick that thought up from there. Again, there were so many different things and so many different ways that she impacted that game last night. We had the stat earlier. I misplaced it, but I think she accounted for 71% of her team's offense last night between the scoring and the assists, which is an almost incomprehensible number.
Well, what's incredible is you say, all right, look at this season and all of the pressure that Caitlin Clark has been under. And when we met with her this weekend, she said there have been times where she's felt the weight of the world on her shoulders. In any of those moments, when has she underperformed? We have not seen her underperform. And you look at the double-double she had last night with her 41 points. A year ago in the Elite Eight, she had a 40-point triple-double. When the stakes are high and everybody's watching and her team is relying on her to lead them to the promised land, she leads them there. And it is just incredible what she has been able to do. Yes, facilitating and scoring, but also instilling a belief in all of her teammates that they can win every game. She just makes everybody better. Everybody have a stronger belief in who they are as a basketball player.
Take another look at that now. Can you put that Hambo pop back up there, Cindy? I just think that's an important thing to note because Kim Mulkey is another name that everybody knows, one of the legendary coaches in the history of the sport. And in all the years that she has been coaching, last night, Iowa scored more points than any other team ever had in regulation against a Kim Mulkey team. That's how special this performance was last night and needed to be because LSU, I thought, was also sensational. Angel Reese in the first half was as good as anybody on the floor. Tim, you had more thoughts.
Yeah, just a couple of things just technically about Caitlin Clark also that just blow me away. The first is the number of shots that she makes with the defender closing on the right side of her body. Like, that is such a different level of concentration that it takes because that is the left side of her body that she's bringing the ball up the floor off of. And so often, she makes a move to separate to the left. Well, the defender then is closing on that right hand. And the fact that she's that unaffected by it is incredible to me. The other thing is her handles. She's so clever and crafty, but everything she does is purposeful. Whether it's a spin, a behind the back, between the legs, a hesitation, any of those four moves, she only utilizes those to create either a shooting lane or an ability to drive or an open window to make a pass. Nothing she does is just playing with the basketball. It's always got a purpose to it with how crafty her handle is. And I just thought both of those things, like technically, really stood out to me last night as well.
Dre, we'll have more of the morning to get to a little more of our preview here. But also last night, I mean, Connecticut and Paige Becker, spectacular. They eliminate Juju Watkins and USC. So the Final Four is set, unbeaten South Carolina and Connecticut, NC State and Iowa. I know the answer to this, but for those who are watching and don't, is Iowa the favorite to win the championship now?
I would still say the South Carolina Gamecocks are the favorite. The South Carolina Gamecocks have been the undefeated team all season. The South Carolina Gamecocks have incredible depth, and they found ways to win while shooting poorly throughout the tournament. I mean, last season they weren't a great shooting team. This season they could shoot the ball, but they have off-shooting days, and they have still found a way to win, and the South Carolina Gamecocks defense is going to set them apart. They're the favorites, but Caitlin Clark, NC State, the way these teams can hit threes, threes are going to keep the game close. I'm telling you, watch out for it, no matter who South Carolina plays.
Yeah, South Carolina will play North Carolina State in the Final Four. That's the matchups that are set up for next week. And Iowa will play UConn. Let me leave that there for a minute. We have more on this game as we go. Everybody stay right where you are. We'll also get a little football conversation in here. Swagoo's with us this morning. Will it be just a pit stop for Russell in Pittsburgh? You'll find out just how long until Swagoo believes Justin Fields will take over that job. Plus, Joel Embiid closing in on a comeback maybe as soon as tonight. Legs, I got an idea of where this thing is headed, and I'm telling you right now, one coach is not going to like it. You'll hear which one. We roll on. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
My, and drains it. My goodness. Clark, she's possessed.
Clark,
again. She's simply ridiculous. Dad will do it this time. It's Iowa. The Hawkeyes are headed back.
To get back here is really hard. This region was loaded with so much talent, and, you know, the job's not finished.
Caitlin Clark spectacular again last night, setting NCAA tournament records left and right. Last night, she breaks the all-time records for assists and made threes. She ties the record for threes in a game, and she can keep it going in the Final Four next weekend. Much more on an epic night in college basketball as we continue. In the meantime, we sprinkling our football conversation, and Dan Graziano is here for some Tuesday overreactions. Graz, if I were to say the New York Jets are Super Bowl contenders, is that an overreaction?
Unfortunately, I have to say yes. I think it's an overreaction. Yes, I know. They're going to be good. I think they look like they're going to be a very good team, but there's a difference between being good and knowing how to win when it counts. And this is still a team that hasn't done that. The coaching staff hasn't proven that. It's been a long time since Aaron Rodgers has proven that. I think they got a ways to go before we can list them with the Chiefs and the other contenders in the AFC.
Marcus, the Jets should have the best defense, not one of the best defense of all these AFC playoff contenders. They've added talent on the offensive side. They have Aaron Rodgers, who's got to be some percentage of what he was at his best. Their offensive line still probably needs a little fortification, but they have the draft to do that. I don't see how they aren't some semblance of a contender here. Are they a Super Bowl contender?
They are a Super Bowl contender, G. Graz is just saying a lot of things have to go right, okay? Yeah. And listen, we understand that the talent is there for the New York Jets. And sitting here in April, you got to make them a Super Bowl contender because they're talented and they have who we believe is one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL if he plays at his level, if not top three, if he can get to the level that he played when last saw him. And we know how much that position dictates the success that you have on the field. I have no questions or worries about the defense. It's all about health and this offensive line. Everything else around the Jets team is really good and high level.
I wasn't even supposed to stay here, but Cindy, our director, I'm going to. And come to Hasselbeck. Hasselbeck, how well do you expect Rodgers to play? I mean, do you expect Rodgers to be how good?
I think he'll play great. Look, he got injured early in the season. He was close to coming back had they been still alive in the playoffs. I think that, you know, coming off of an Achilles injury isn't the same as it once was. Guys do it with much more success. And so I think in regard to that, Aaron Rodgers' skill set, the way the ball comes out of his hand still, and then just from the mental aspect of the game. We have to remember, prior to the injury, he's playing at an MVP level for years, consecutive years. So, look, I think Aaron will come back, and if he's healthy and moving around fine, I think he'll be the Aaron Rodgers that we were used to seeing. And Aaron Rodgers that we saw in Green Bay made everybody around him better. Like, that was the type of quarterback that he was. And so I think with that, if you get that at the Jets, yeah, I think they're absolutely a contending team.
All right, I feel so much better now. I can start getting dressed again as we continue with the overreactions. All right, Graziano, the next one is the Ravens. If I said they are the biggest threat to the Chiefs, is that an overreaction?
Yeah, because apparently the Jets are. Look, I mean, the Ravens are good, and they were obviously in the AFC Championship game, but I am concerned about the potential for the Ravens to take a slight step back. Not a major one. They're a strong organization. They'll always recover. But they've seen a lot more guys go out the door than come in. And that includes three significant members of their defensive coaching staff, including the coordinator, who's now the head coach of the Seahawks. The other two assistants they lost are now defensive coordinators elsewhere. I think they have some stuff to fix from this offseason before they're back in that AFC championship game.
So, Tim, who is the biggest threat to Kansas City in the AFC?
I think it's the Ravens. Do they lose some guys on the defensive side of the ball, coaching staff included? Absolutely. But we have to remember, this was year one in this offense for Lamar Jackson and, you know, a kind of revamped receiving crew. Look at the strides that they made. Like, finally, you saw the growth in their offense, especially with Lamar as a passer. And I would expect them to be significantly better, you know, this upcoming season. Just in that alone, regardless of personnel and the development of young players like Zay Flowers or what the impact that Derrick Henry will have. So I actually believe that it is the Baltimore Ravens in a big way.
Lost three starting offensive linemen. Is that nothing? Like, I think there's a lot. They've suffered some losses. The Bengals are going to play a fourth-place schedule with a potentially healthy Joe Burrow. I mean, I think it's going to be tough.
And obviously the Jets. And keeping with the theme of your
Super
pocket
Bowl
square.
Favorites.
You got that Jets pocket square working for me this morning, which I like. All right, one more overreaction. If I said the Steelers can win the AFC North, is that an overreaction?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's going to be tough for the Steelers to win the AFC North. I think, obviously, I mentioned the Bengals. I think that we don't know what the Browns are going to get from Deshaun Watson, but they got almost nothing from him last year, and they still made the playoffs. Baltimore will still be a factor, even if they do take a step back, as I feel they might. I think it's going to be tough. We can talk all we want about the great prices for which the Steelers got these two quarterbacks, but we do have to remember, they were not exactly fighting off a whole bunch of other teams for the services of Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. I think the Steelers are, you know, I think they have a chance to be good. I think it's going to be tough to favor them in the division.
Swagoo, who is going to be the Steelers quarterback, and how good are they going to be?
I think the quarterback is going to be Justin Fields. And I'm not saying that as an indictment on Russell Wilson. I think Russell Wilson is still a good starter in the NFL. I don't know how much you can win with him, but I think you have to get this Justin Fields going because this may be your future if you can see the type of play that you want to see out of him. Youth is served well in the NFL. We can't get around it. And I'm sure that they want to see him in this offense with Jaylen Warren and Najee Harris, a complimentary run game. And we saw Arthur Smith revamp a quarterback when name slipping me came
Ryan
over
Tannehill.
From Miami. Say
Ryan
the name
Tannehill.
For me, guy. Yeah, Ryan Tannehill. So when you get to the point with Justin Fields and some of the glimmers of success that we saw with him in Chicago at times with his play, I believe the Pittsburgh Steelers is saying that's coaching. We can get him to a point where he can be high level. So I'm going to go with Justin Fields to be the starter in Chicago and have them have an high-powered offense, especially a run game.
Yeah, look, I pick a hill to die on every year. This is my hill. Justin Fields is a better player than he has had the opportunity to demonstrate, and I continue to believe that. Everyone lately is telling me I'm wrong, and Lord knows I have been in the past, but I'm sticking with that one.
We may be, G, but that's okay.
Yeah.
We may be wrong, but that's okay.
It's exactly
right. It's okay, man.
Sometimes you fall off a boat, and you know what? You drive yourself out. Yeah. You drive yourself off. And you just keep going. All right, as we continue, much more on Caitlin Clark's magical night last night. How special does she need to be for Iowa to have a chance to win the national championship? We're talking about it. Plus, we've also got the comeback. Does Joel's return set up a nightmare scenario? One NBA coach. Spoiler alert, yes, it does. And I'll tell you which one and why next.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
A trip to the Final Four on the line. South Carolina is headed to the Final Four. Still undefeated, still dancing.
The Wolfpack is coming.
I'm so proud of them. We wasn't even ranked before the season. Now we're going to the Final Four.
My goodness. Clark, this time it's Iowa.
This is what you work for all year.
It's not how you start, it's how you finish. UConn back to the Final Four.
Cleveland, you better get ready.
So here it is, your Final Four, four schools named after states, unbeaten South Carolina, trying to finish the job. Caitlin Clark pushing for legend status, an NC State team that hasn't been there in a while, and a UConn team that is quite literally there all the time, it seems like, and no one knows that better than Rebecca Lobo does, and she's up with us early this morning, and so is Andrea Carter, and we will get Swagoo back in here a little bit for more of the perspective on all this today. By the way, how about NC State and UConn? Both the men's and women's teams both making it to the Final Four. So quite a scene that we have here. Let's quickly, just for those just joining us, guys, at the bottom of an hour here. Andrea, I'll start with you. For those who are just tuning in, how do we put into words the performance of Caitlin Clark last night, particularly in the second half?
Greeny, we used so many words on our show last night, me, Chinee, and Elle. We used surgical, we used a clinic, we used a master class. But truly the one that I landed on when I got back to the hotel was like, it was inspiring. Like, you don't always get to see great players rise to the occasion over and over again at this level the way Caitlin Clark has. The poise that she played with, the control that she played with. She didn't come out and force a single thing. She just let the game come to her. It looked so effortless. The control that she had the entire time. Rebecca, I don't know what you want to call it, but it was inspiring for me to watch her handle all the pressure in this way.
Rebecca.
I'll say it was Caitlin being Caitlin. It's what we've seen from her throughout the course of her career, in particular the last season and a half. It's what we've seen from her all season long when the moment gets big and she meets the moment. What was interesting about this weekend is she told us a couple of days before this Elite Eight game that she was feeling the weight of the world on her shoulders. Well, she's got some strong shoulders because she has certainly continued to live up to all of the expectations.
Absolutely. And that's what the great ones do. I mean, as long as there have been sports, the ones who separate themselves, the ones who are considered the all-time great ones, are in the biggest moments, can they be their best? And she certainly has proven the ability to do that. But hers may not be the best team. So a quick look ahead to the Final Four. She'll go head-to-head with Paige Beckers in the next round, Rebecca, which is a matchup that, well, what can you say? It's about as good as it can possibly be. Give us a preview of the Final Four, which we will have, of course, Friday on ESPN.
Well, just think about the history of these two young women. Paige Beckers and Caitlin Clark were going back and forth for freshman of the year, their freshman year, which is the best freshman in the country. And then Paige Beckers ends up being the national player of the year. They met in the Sweet 16 their freshman season. UConn was able to win that game by 20. Both of those young women came out and had good performances, especially in their first Sweet 16 game. And then their paths have been so different. Paige Beckers has dealt with injury. Last year, Caitlin really emerged on the scene as the best player in the women's college game. And now here we are, 3 years later. Caitlin's last year. Paige is going to return for another. But these two players are meeting once again. These two unique talents, the conversation around them since they got to their colleges was, which one is better? And now we get to see them meet on the biggest stage. It's pretty remarkable.
And Andrea, in the end, though, for those who don't follow it all so closely, South Carolina remains the best team, right? On the other side of this Final Four bracket, taking on NC State on Friday night, South Carolina unbeaten remains the best team, yes?
100%. The storylines are great. Paige and Caitlin have been incredible. What UConn's been able to do with the injuries has been phenomenal. South Carolina is still top dog. South Carolina is still the best team in terms of depth, in terms of talent, top to bottom. There are players on South Carolina's bench that would be starters on multiple teams across the country. They have depth. They are capable of knocking down threes. They have an incredible inside presence with 6'7", Camilla Cardoso, who they need to play through every single possession. NC State will have their hands full. NC State is a great shooting team. They've got electric guards. I do think that's going to be a battle. But South Carolina remains the favorite. All this is fun and good. All the glimmer, all the shine, all the superstardom is great. South Carolina still remains the best team.
Okay, so the Final Four coming up Friday and then Sunday on ESPN and ABC. So, no, we have that. So last year, these two teams, the teams we saw last night, LSU and Iowa, played against each other in an epic championship game. And the way the game played out and the conversation that ensued because of it made both Caitlin Clark and LSU's Angel Reese legitimate celebrities. I mean, significantly known, famous people in our sports culture and beyond. And I wanted you to hear Angel Reese's reaction last night after her team loses and her reflection on her journey the past 2 years.
I've been through so much. I've seen so much. I've been attacked so many times. Death threats. I've been sexualized. I've been threatened. I've been so many things, and I've stood strong every single time. And I just try to stand strong for my teammates because I don't want them to see me down and, like, not be there for them. So I just want them to always just know, like, I'm still a human, like, all this has happened since I won the national championship, and I said the other day I haven't had peace since then. And it sucks, but I still wouldn't change. I wouldn't change anything, and I would still sit here and say, like, I'm unapologetically me. I'm going to always leave that mark and be who I am and stand on that.
I wanted to get some comments from Marcus on this as well as an LSU alum and one who knows all the people involved. But, Rebecca, we've not heard from you on this morning. What is your reaction to what Angel said there?
We had some really interesting conversations with Angel leading up to the Sweet 16 and then Elite Eight matchups. And she addressed some of that and said, you know, she's like, I'm strong. I can take on the criticism that maybe other people can't. I can take the brunt of that. And she's kind of worn that throughout the course, certainly of the last year since the national championship game. And this is a young woman. It's interesting because she definitely has a very different on-court persona than the player and the person that you talk to off of the floor. You know, she talks a little bit of trash. She celebrates in a different way. And then when you're talking to her off the court, she's completely unassuming and gives all kinds of credit to her teammates and just comes across very differently. So we haven't seen her be this kind of vulnerable throughout all of this. She's kind of had that Teflon personality that she can handle everything. But of course, she's 21 or 22 years old, and no matter what you portray to the outside, she's a young person, and this kind of criticism that she has dealt with is going to take its toll. But she certainly, leading up to the games, was talking to us. She understands that, and she said, "I am strong enough to take it."
Drea.
Yeah, I mean, I said it a little bit earlier. We need to get to a place where we are judging athletes based on their performance on the court. Angel can handle criticism of her game, but what starts to get heavy is criticism of who she is as a young woman. And one of my favorite stories about Angel Reese was last season in preparing for the national championship game, watching LSU shoot around and seeing the joy that Angel Reese had while going through the scouting report. She was so joyful in saying, "Who's the shooter? What are we doing here?" The energy that she has off the court, the trash talking on the court, I love that too. But no one really knows who she is as a woman. And in this age of social media, where people who really have no business speaking to Angel Reese ever have the ability to give their opinion on her as a person. And that's where we have to get to a point where criticizing people who they are as people is not a factor in the equation. Criticize her game, but you don't know her as a person until you get to spend time with her. And people forget that all the time.
Marcus, again, as an LSU alum in particular, I'm curious to hear your perspective.
All right, so let me share my little my little on-trend masterclass real quick of social media. And here's the thing. And Rebecca can relate to this. Drea can relate to this. And G, you can relate to this. Because we're in media and we get vitriol. I will tell every young kid out there, especially Angel Reese, because this is the topic of conversation. successful people don't say the type of things that people say to you on Instagram, on Twitter. Those people have internal issues. That's why I deal with social media so great. For it to affect you when someone is saying something about you, it shows that it matters to you what people say. And that's fine. But ultimately, you have to get back to the point and realize that if you go through every comment, if you go through every hateful or vitriol thing that people are saying about you, it is no one that is of significance in their own life. I tell people all the time, when I get hate or when Rebecca, or I'm sure Drea deals with it, the people that are saying these things, it is mirror time for them. Because I haven't went on Twitter one time because I'm busy and I'm happy and I'm successful and my family matters to hate and spend time talking about someone else. I just don't do it. And I don't know anyone in my circle or any successful person or person that is truly happy with the way that they're living their life that takes time to go and do this. So just keep that in perspective to all of the youngins out there and even some adults that deal with dealing with this social media stuff. The people that are sending these things are having issues with themselves. It is absolutely not about you. That's been my PSA for today.
I've been trying to make that point for so many years, going back to my days on Mike and Mike, and the issue with it, and this is not the time and place to talk about it, Marcus, is that for people of our generation, I think it's a lot easier to separate ourselves from that. But for people who are our kids' generation, which is exactly how old Angel Reese is, at least in my case, my daughter is older than her, this is the world they live in, and it is real to them in ways that it is not real to you and me. You and I can ignore that stuff because in our own minds, it doesn't really matter. But I think in the minds of a younger generation, it does matter, at least differently. And it's a complicated issue. This is not the time and place to get into it, but it's something I've been talking about for a long time. All of you, thank you. Much more on the game last night as we continue. I need one big take from Legler, though, this morning, because we had the huge NBA story yesterday. So, Legler, where are you? Joel Embiid coming back, maybe as soon as tonight. The Sixers, when he has been in the lineup, have been sensational. At this moment, they figure almost certainly to be in the play-in. They have 7 games left to get him ready to go. If they should find their way out of the play-in in that first game, the 7-8 game figures to be Sixers Heat. If they win that game, they will play Doc, their former coach, and a Milwaukee team that's been very uneven in the first round. How do you like it?
I still don't think Milwaukee's hit their peak offensively with Dame and Giannis. I don't think they have quite found that. They've been better defensively under Doc Rivers. They haven't been very good in close games. Philadelphia injects themselves into the conversation if Joel Embiid comes back. And I would rarely ever say that about a team getting a player back after missing this much time with so little time to prepare for the postseason coming out of the play-in. That's how good Joel Embiid is. There's no answer for him. There's no game plan. There's no scheme. There's no personnel to deal with him. Immediately, the Sixers become dangerous if he takes the court. Now, look, we've got to see what he looks like in terms of stamina, minutes, all of those things. But assuming he's 110% physically, which, by the way, I do not think Joel Embiid would be taking the court if he didn't tell them he basically feels perfect physically. That's the level to which he has to be in order to play. Now, let's see him round into form over this last handful of regular season games and watch what Philly can do if they get that matchup.
Can they be the second best team in the East? I'll point it out again. They've had the second best record in the NBA when he plays. Can they be that in the playoffs?
Their ceiling is the biggest threat to Boston. That's their ceiling. It has to come together. As we sit here right now today, that would still be Milwaukee, but that's weeks away from when we would get to that point. By that time, Philadelphia could be, that is their ceiling, the biggest threat to the Boston Celtics.
Sixers and Bucks figure to face off in the first round if one of them is going to get there, depending on how things play out for Philly in the play-in. All right, excellent, my man. Thank you. As we continue, a little more football with the return of Swagoo. Caleb or Jaden, what does Marcus think the Bears should do with the number one pick? He will tell you the answer to that. And let's see if Graz can tell you the answer to this. Here's a question for you, Dan. Which NFL head coach use the most first-round draft picks on a quarterback in the common draft era? If you think about it, I think you'll get it next.
Well, I'll think about it.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
All right, Hambo versus Graziano, and we just have Legler here for moral support.
I'm on a heater right now, so I'm gonna let him go.
He just likes being there when other people beat Hambo. So there's one NFL coach who has used more first round draft picks on quarterbacks than any other in the common draft era. Who is that coach?
We're going through it, right? Like Andy Reid drafted Donovan McNabb and Patrick Mahomes, and Mike Shanahan drafted Jay Cutler and Robert Griffin III. But so somebody has to have at least three, because that's multiple guys.
The number.
I know that Jeff Fisher had Goff in L.A. and Vince Young in Tennessee. Would he have had somebody else in Tennessee?
If it's hard for you, I got no shot.
I'm going to guess Jeff Fisher.
And Jeff Fisher is right.
Oh,
that is correct.
Come on.
Steve McNair.
Steve McNair is the answer. Steve McNair. I almost knew that.
Look at Hembo. He's a beaten man.
Well,
he's gone. He's out of here. Get out, Hembo.
Wow.
You've been defeated.
That's an all-time pull.
16
what are you
coaches.
Gonna do? You just got to tip your cap.
16 coaches have drafted two quarterbacks in round one. Jeff Fisher, the only one to draft three.
It's a route.
You have doubled him up. You are the Caitlin Clark of trivia. You are the best I've ever seen.
I would have done it from farther away.
Well done. Okay, let me do a little football here because we had Swagoo back today. We've been catching up on stuff. And one of those things, of course, is Caleb Williams, the USC quarterback, Heisman winner of 2 years ago, and presumptive number one overall pick. And I've not had a chance to ask Marcus, because, again, he hasn't been with us in quite some time, if he believes the Bears are getting this right. So we have him and Tim Hasselbeck with us today, along with Graziano. Marcus, you watch all these kids play. You obviously know Jaden Daniels as well as Jaden Daniels can be known with your being from LSU. Do you believe the Bears are taking the right quarterback at number one if they take Caleb Williams?
Yeah, I do believe, G. I think playmaking and what you watch on film matters, man. I know, look, we always get to this time of the year and people start talking about every other quarterback. This guy could be first. Let's see what happens when the draft gets close. But Caleb Williams has been consistent over 2 years. He's phenomenal at improv, making plays, which the league is a lot of right now. Obviously, his ability to push the ball downfield wasn't complimented greatly by a defense at USC and kept his team in games. You look at the Notre Dame performance when he had three turnovers. I liked his attitude. He kept going, kept playing, kept trying to win that game. So I think a lot of the things about a lot of these guys are phenomenal. To me, Caleb Williams is different than all of these guys when it comes to what I believe the success that he can have on the next level is. So that, and look, we have to get to a point where when we talk about another guy being really good or whoever the individual believes is the best guy in this draft, it doesn't mean the other guys suck. It's just right. The preference, and it's what I believe. And I think Caleb Williams is the quarterback that is going to change the franchise for the better out of these guys coming out of the draft this year.
So now, Tim Hasselbeck, I cite you literally all the time because through a long draft process, you know, there it feels as though there are peaks and valleys for all of these guys, even though they haven't played a football game in 3 months. And Drake May is one who it feels like, again, and everyone is lying to you at this time of year, right?
Correct.
But it feels like in many people's eyes, his stock is dropping a little bit. Tim, you have maintained steadfastly that he is the prospect you like the best. So remind everybody of why. Show us some tape.
Yeah, well, listen, I'll just say this. My evaluation of a guy is always going to be heavily on what he's done on the football field. I mean, that'll always be the thing that is the anchor to any evaluation I have on a quarterback. So anything that happens beyond that, I think is an overreaction. Here's what I'd say about Drake May. He plays the position with great vision. You have a trap corner, he sees it, he's going to make you pay for it. That's a key aspect of playing the game is your scope of vision to see it. Some guys play with a narrow focus. He most certainly does not, and I think that is important when a defense is gambling. I think this, we talk a lot about these guys that are at the top of the draft and their athleticism and their ability to create. I think we've undersold that in a very big way in talking about Drake May. He's a left-handed throw creating against Pittsburgh, down in the red zone. That's uncommon, that stuff that he does there. And I would just say this, pocket, awareness and vision. He's getting zero blitz against South Carolina, knows the protection issues. Look at the subtle movement in the pocket, the drift. He knows the problems. And then because the tight end doesn't set his angle, he kind of re-grips this thing and makes the throw without ever putting his left hand on the football. Like there is a unique ability that this guy has from a physical perspective. And I've said this the entire process, Greeny. I believe that he physically is on par with the elites in the game as soon as he enters into the league. So the Josh Allens, the Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, in terms of size, arm strength, athletic ability, he's in that group. That is rarefied air. I've maintained that this entire process, and I certainly haven't seen anything to make me come off of that as you look at other things that have happened since the season ended.
I keep saying the Giants should take Drake May. He's the perfect spot. If people are saying that you don't want him to play immediately, let him sit. The Giants have Daniel Jones for another year. That's not going to change. They have Brian Daboll, who created Josh Allen. I mean, however one wants to use that term. So move up, get Drake May, let him sit behind Daniel Jones for a season or most of a season, and then boom, you go forward from there. I feel like that's the perfect scenario, Graz.
I mean, it sounds good, but can you do it? Like, you can't do it if that's the guy Washington wants at two. Like, that's impossible. It's not gettable. So maybe does Washington take Daniels at two after the Bears take Caleb at one, and then all of a sudden you can get up to three? Maybe the Patriots don't like Drake May, but if they do, you can't get him. So the Giants picking at six may not be in that position to pull that off.
Now, one way or another, this is all going to get so interesting. Tomorrow we'll dive much more back into all of our draft stuff today, obviously heavily with all of the Caitlin Clark and the game last night. Swagoo, it is great to have you back. Don't go falling off any boats on me anytime again soon, okay? Don't make me worry while I have you on vacation. In the meantime, First Take is coming up next. Much more on the game last night. What did Caitlin Clark prove with her performance? It's Christine Williamson with Stephen A., Shannon, Drea, and more. Top of the hour here on ESPN. NIT semifinals tonight. Utah takes on Indiana State, 7 Eastern on ESPN. Georgia Seton Hall, 9:30 Eastern on ESPN2. See everything on the ESPN app. Hey, Graz, quickly, tell Legs, the biggest Commanders fan in the world, who's he going to get it to? Who are they taking?
I don't know. I'm going to predict Drake May.
What do you think?
Well, you knew the Fisher answer. You can't tell me that.
I know
First
the past.
Take now.
I know the future.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.